kwakuwankwamnyako nauvuku naundukufu atamilele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of Radio Harambe, the official podcast of JomboEveryone.com and the unofficial podcast of Disney's Animal Kingdom and Walt Disney World. We invite you to visit us at JomboEveryone.com. There you can find all of our content, including our blog, conservation shop, our YouTube channel, as well as links to Facebook and Twitter, all of our dining reviews and attraction reviews and all that kind of stuff. On this show, we will talk about news from the Animal Kingdom and the rest of Walt Disney World. And then in our final segment, we'll talk about our hidden gems of Disney's Animal Kingdom. I am your host, Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe Studios. And joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who is working diligently on his bush pilot's license, is Safari Mike. Mike, where are you today?
Jumbo, and I am from the Mongolian steppes. We are tracking snow leopards. You very rarely see them out here in the wild, but we are able to use camera traps to spot them and document how many of them actually are. There's not a lot of prey out here, so there's huge amounts of space that each single snow leopard occupies as its home territory. So they're very, very difficult to see. They're also, even though they're called snow leopards, they're not really white. They're more of like an off gray. So they really should be called crag leopards or rock leopards than snow leopards. It makes it very difficult to actually see them.
And these things are like one of the animals that's even rare to photograph, isn't it?
Yeah, they're very, very rare. Every once in a while, a nature photographer will get a brief video clip or a camera shot of the snow leopards. First of all, they tend to, you know, hunt at night, which, you know, right. I don't know about you, and they live up in the mountains. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be walking around the mountain at nighttime. It's usually bad for your health.
Yeah.
So they're very, very difficult to spot in the wild, but they are beautiful animals.
So let's begin this episode with the local news from in and around Disney's Animal Kingdom. And it has been a slow news week, especially in comparison to the last couple weeks, which things have just been coming at us. First thing on the agenda is Tarzan and Jane are having a very short run meet and greet this week. They're coming back this time to Disney's Animal Kingdom. If you are in the parks this week, and this week only, look for them. I think it's at the Oasis, just inside the park entrance.
Right.
There, as far as I know, these appearances are scheduled to end on like around August 24th. So we're talking about the next couple of days. Tarzan and Jane are rarely in the parks, and it's a bit strange, I would say, that this is something that they're doing. However, it's not part of the limited time magic promo, of which something like this would seem to fit.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre that they actually announced this. I mean, what I think we all think it is that Tarzan and Jane are characters that you regularly see at Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party. And what often happens when they have a lot of characters in single events, particularly Mickey's Not-So-Scary, which is one of the main things, they do a lot of training people temporarily who come in just to do it for the season, to be characters during the season. You'll see them a lot, and I mean, you'll see it on Twitter and other social media, where all of a sudden at the American Adventure in Epcot, there's like 10 different characters. There's a Goofy and a Minnie, and just out of the blue, not scheduled, not nothing. Those are people training to be these characters for Mickey's Not So Scary. I can only assume that this is what this is, because that party's coming up in a couple of weeks. Why they announced it and made a semi-big deal of it is the real question.
Yeah, it is kind of strange, especially, like I said, especially since it's not part of the limited time magic promo. I think an announcement like this would have been part of that. But it's not. It's a good chance if you're into character meet and greets and you want to try to get something you rarely get to see, this is a good place for it.
And also, the other thing about it, why are they doing it in the Oasis? Why not are you doing it in Pangani? I mean, Tarzan was king of the jungle in Africa. I mean, you would think you would fit right into Pangani, right? At the front there or some, you know, something like that. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a space issue or something to that effect. The next item is something that we may have touched on in the last episode, but maybe we didn't. It is that the acrobatic dance troupe has been added to the Asia section of the park. Last week, a new, I guess you'd call it a dance troupe there. It's kind of like an acrobatic thing, debuted. The show takes place right in front of the Yak and Yeti's counter service area. I haven't personally seen it yet. I've just kind of seen videos. You know, it's a little underwhelming, but to be honest, performance and music on YouTube is generally underwhelming to begin with. So personally, I'm going to kind of save judgment on it. I like that they're adding to the entertainment options. I like that they change them. I really am somebody that thinks entertainment and bands and things like that, the repertoires and even the offerings need to change now and again. So I at least like that aspect of it. And I guess, like I said, I'll hold judgment until I've seen it myself, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you to a degree that you sort of have to see it for yourself. I watched it on YouTube or other sites, and it was underwhelming. It wasn't very acrobatic. I mean, they didn't do anything that we were like, wow. I mean, how'd they do that, kind of? Which is what I kind of expect when you call something acrobatic. It's also very Far Eastern. The music is very Japanese flavor to it, which is not really, to me, doesn't really fit into an Andapur.
Yeah, I failed to mention that, but I agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest issue I have. I mean, like you said, I'll wait to see what it looks like to see if I really like it or not. I'll see it in person, but it just doesn't seem to fit. Not like the DJ Anon did, which I don't even know if that's gone or I don't know.
Speaking of fitting in, last time we discussed that coming up was going to be the debut of a new character, new living statue called Bamboo. And now, since we mentioned that in the last episode, we have both had our chance to get a good look at Bamboo. Once again, I'm going to err on the side of caution here. I'm going to be nice. And I'm going to say that despite some of the early photographs and video, that I'm going to wait to see this one in person. I will say this. This is not high praise at all, but it does seem to me to be a little bit cooler than Divine. But again, that's not saying much. The other good thing I'll say about it is that I appreciate the eclectic nature of some of these things at Animal Kingdom. I really do. And this is something that could change and get better over time, or it could just go away, or the performers may change. I've already seen what appears to be at least two different ones in the photographs. So go ahead, Mike.
I was worried.
Have at it.
I was worried. As you know, we've discussed on the show and other shows in the past, I'm not a big fan of Divine. I was worried that this was going to be as bad as Divine. And I have to tell you, the first time I saw Bamboo, I threw up a little bit in my mouth. This is far worse. It is atrocious. The costume is atrocious.
Yes.
Where Divine looks like you're supposed... at least she's supposed to be part of the... you know, the grape leaf jungle. I mean, we've gone over this ad nauseum.
Yeah.
But Bamboo just sticks out like a sore thumb. He looks like, I called this somewhere else. He doesn't look like a piece of bamboo or a bamboo plant. He looks like, you know, Jungle Stilt Warrior G.I. Joe.
Yeah, he does. He looks,
army helmet. He's got this bizarre...
staves or something he's holding in his hands and stuff, which I think is just because he's not really good at walking on stilts.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He's terrible at stilt walking. He's got, like, leaves just jutting out randomly from his legs and arms that apparently that fall off periodically. And he's got this
bizarre...
Do
you get to take him home?
Yeah. He's got this bizarre mask that looks like they bought it at, you know, a Halloween... you know, one of those 99-cent ones that you find at the Halloween store.
Yeah, hobby shop.
Yeah, this green mask that's just ugly.
Yeah.
He's atrocious, and I hope... I'm going to Disney World in October. I really, really hope he's gone by then.
I'm not prepared to say atrocious yet.
Oh, he's atrocious.
Okay. So, there's Bamboo. If you're in the parks, go see Bamboo. And certainly, if you take any great photographs of him, tweet them to @JomboEveryone on Twitter so that Mike can be inundated with Bamboo photos. Here's one that's kind of a little off, you know, not exactly news, but I wanted to mention it. I mentioned it on the blog a few times. The creative leader of our beloved park has his own personal site, and one you may not have known about. Joe Rohde has a website, joerohde.net. He describes it as his personal space where he will discuss things mostly out of the Disney realm. But, you know, he's an Imagineer, so, he's one of these people who everything's inside the realm of what he does. And he's an artist, so, all the places that he's going and talking about, could all be considered as part of the Disney realm. It's not, like I said, it's not news because the site's been around for a long time. In fact, it looks like it's been around for a couple of years, but he only put a few postings on until very recently, where he seems to be putting up quite a bit. He's on travels. Mike mentioned Mongolia. I believe Joe Rohde was there at the same time. You probably passed each other in the bush plains.
No, he's on his way. He's coming in a couple of weeks, I heard.
Oh, he's on his way there. Oh, so you're just going to have to find a lean-to to stay in for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, perhaps we'll have lunch in the somewhere. Mongolian beef. I like Mongolian beef.
Who does?
Of course, they just call it beef here, but neither here, whatever.
So anyway, if you're interested in Joe Rohde like I am, check it out because the postings that he's done over the last couple of weeks are beautifully written. He's got some great photography on there and even some artwork that he's done. Have you read it, Mike?
I've read it. I've noticed that it's very, very focused in on ancient, out-of-the-way kind of places and art on the one hand and conservation on the other, which really is kind of what Animal Kingdom is like, to be honest. I mean, really, he talks about conservation issues, particularly the snow leopard most recently. And he talks about, places in Nepal, Turkey, like ancient ruins that he's drawn. He's made some drawings of these and painted things like that. I mean, it's very Animal Kingdom-ish.
Yet he has to create Pandora.
Exactly. He's stuck with Pandora, so he's using this website as a true creative outlet.
To keep him sane?
Yeah, exactly.
Finally, I wanted to mention this. We've had a little bit of a hipster's invasion this week. Like I said, it's a slow news week, so I wanted to take a chance to plug our friends, the Disney Hipsters, and they have two fantastic shows, and yours truly and Safari Mike were guests on both of them this week. We talked about, what did we talk about, Mike? We did review Dinosaur.
Yeah, we reviewed Dinosaur. We talked about all the
Animal Kingdom
news.
We've
talked about here on this episode and the last episode. We kind of got into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And, it was a little bit more blue, as they say in the show business.
Yeah, and they have their own take on these things, which is certainly interesting. If you want to hear some great Animal Kingdom coverage, you don't just want to listen to the two of us drone along, Andrew and Adam add some great, some great insights into this stuff, and they have a great eye for the aesthetics of things. So it's interesting to hear what they say about this stuff. So, if you can go to DisneyHipsters.com, you'll get some information there. Go to iTunes, search Disney Hipsters. You'll get both shows. It's the two recent ones and, which came out only a couple of days ago this week. And we are on both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the privilege of being on them five times now, so it's always fun.
How you're able to do this from around the world is befuddling to me.
I fly in just for the Hipsters.
Well, that's it for the local news. We're going to take a short break and be back with the world news on Radio Harambe. At the Jumbo Everyone store, you can purchase fun and stylish apparel and merchandise, all while helping save wildlife. At Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com, we are committed to doing everything we can to help our conservation partners who are on the ground working to keep endangered animals from extinction. So with every purchase made at the store, we will donate 50% of the profits to our partners. You'll find t-shirts, hats, iPad covers, tote bags, and much more. And all the items are customizable to fit your size, taste, and budget. We have great Jumbo Everyone logo merchandise, plus some really exciting animal designs featuring cheetahs, rhinos, gorillas, macaws, and zebras. Go to JomboEveryone.com and click the banner for the store and help us in our conservation efforts. Welcome back to Radio Harambe, episode 6 of this podcast. And it is now time for the world news, the news from the rest of Walt Disney World and the Disney stratosphere, I suppose you'd say. And with the news is Safari Mike. Mike, what do we got this week?
Okay, just a few items for our discussion. First of all, Marty Sklar, who I think probably anybody who listens to this podcast knows who that is, the famous Imagineer Marty Sklar. He's releasing a book called Dream It, Do It, My Half Century of Creating Disney's Magic Kingdoms. I encourage everybody to go get it. That's number one. And number two is if you're in Disney World in middle of September, he's going to actually be there signing books. He's going to be at the Writer's Stop at Disney Hollywood Studios on September 11th from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. And if you miss that one, he's going to be at the Art of Disney in Downtown Disney from 11 to 12:30 on September 12th. So go check that out.
You know, I always worry about books like this because when they're still involved with the company, they tend to be a little
jaded.
Yeah, a little
softball.
A little tonic, a little less to it. But he, even if that is the case, Marty Sklar has been there for so long. I mean, there's so much to cover. I mean, the guy could probably write a trilogy of books on his time at Disney. So.
He can write one just about Epcot.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I tend to read all of these anyway, so I'm looking forward to it. I recently read Rolly Crump's, which was just terrific. I mean, it was a great, great book. But again, Rolly's a little removed from the business now.
Right.
So he's able to kind of be a little more, honest. I would think honest. I don't know if honest is the right word, but at least not worry too much about any kind of corporate response. But if I'm disappointed, I'm not going to be in the parks when Marty Sklar is there, because I'd be one who'd stand in line.
That would be awfully cool.
Yeah,
definitely. That would be awfully cool.
The only thing cooler is if Joe Rohde were doing it. Then I'd camp out overnight at the front gate.
I'm going to read his book and Tony Baxter's too. That'd be a fascinating read.
Absolutely. That's coming. I can guarantee you that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure Joe Rohde's going to write one, but I'm pretty sure Tony Baxter will.
I'd be surprised if Joe Rohde didn't write one.
I'd be surprised if he did.
I don't think he would write one that was, the tell-all, bashing Disney kind of thing. But I could definitely see him writing a book when he leaves Disney, just talking about what it was like to be that and, like, talking about Alani and stuff like that. I could definitely see that.
Yeah, he might kind of focus it.
It wouldn't be a bashing. It would not be a bashing.
Because if you look at you look at Joe Rohde, and especially the Animal Kingdom and all of the things where the budgets were removed and plans taken apart and things weren't fixed. I mean, I would imagine Joe's got a lot of things to gripe about when he's in grumpy old curmudgeon, 20 years from now, or I don't even know how old he is. But, I would be surprised if he would. He just doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would go halfway. He's either going to write the book about what he did or he's not.
let me tell you something about Joe Rohde. Something I heard from somebody who I believe.
Okay.
He said to me, this person, that when he met Joe Rohde and he talked to him about the Beastly Kingdom and how cool it would have been. He claims that Joe Rohde said to him, if it was going to be that cool, we would have built it.
Yeah.
I found that interesting.
Yeah. Well.
Not sure if I believe,
I'm hoping for the book.
Exactly.
I would like him to do a book just on the way they researched the things that they did at the Animal Kingdom. I mean, the stories behind what he did to research Everest. But we're getting away from Marty Sklar here, who did the same kind of thing. It's definitely worth looking into.
Yeah, go get that book. And if you live in Florida or if you're down there for that week, I know it's a quiet week generally.
Yeah.
Check out those two times.
Yeah.
But that's when the book is generally coming out. I don't have the release date in front of me, but it's coming out.
Okay.
All right.
What's next?
Next is one of the premier restaurants at Disney has been shut down for quite some time. It's been about 6 months refurbishment, but the California Grill over there at the Grand Floridian, at the Contemporary Resort, my apologies,
right.
is opening on September 9, 2013. So again, if you're going to be there in that mid-September range, you can go to the California Grill and see what it looks like. They're going to start making reservations on August 26th. So you can call starting that day to book for the California Grill. There's going to be some new stuff there. It's a new design. There's Mary Blair artwork presented on there. There's a new wine display. And there's actually a new... there's going to be two outdoor viewing decks for the fireworks, one in the south and one in the north of the area. So some major refurbishment done. Some tweaks to the menu. I've actually never eaten at the California Grill.
No.
You know, it's... You know,
neither have I.
$50 for a soup or whatever it is.
Yeah, no,
I hear it's tremendous. I hear the sushi is terrific. And most of the menu is coming back, you know, as it was. But, you know, some major refurbishment to the design itself. But and it's opening up soon.
Okay, cool. That's like I said, I've never been, and I probably won't ever go unless I come across some very rich friends who decide they're going to pick up the tab for me. So, next.
Celebrate a Dream Come True Parade at the Magic Kingdom apparently is going down as of December 9th. And that's pretty much all I got to say about this. This parade is... long since seen its day, and you know the artwork for the new parade coming sometime in the spring of next year looks pretty cool. Certainly different than what we've seen. So that's closing for good December 9th. I guess the Christmas parade will take over at that point in time, and then I guess there won't be a parade for a little bit, but you know that's what we're looking at.
I discovered ages ago that when the parade is on in the afternoon, that's the time to hit your big rides. So I actually haven't probably sat and watched a daytime parade at Disney's at the Magic Kingdom in 25 years.
Yeah, I generally don't watch parades. I mean, there's a couple parades that I like. I mean, I made a point of going to the Animal Kingdom one not that long ago. And,
sure.
And that's a real good one.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to wait to the last minute. But any of these parades that you have to camp out of sight, that has a spot ahead of time, like well ahead of time, to me, it's just a roadblock. It's just to me, if I'm in the park at that time, which is kind of rare, I'll admit, you know, that's usually where I'm back at the resort swimming or whatnot. But if I am at the park at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's just, you know, essentially it's just makes my life difficult to try to get to, you know, Carousel of Progress if I'm at, right. Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, that's really what the parade means to me.
Right, and that's why I said afternoon parades, because certainly if you're there during Christmas, you go see the Christmas ones, and, you know, if you're paying for the parties, you go see those. I remember seeing the Pirate and Princess party
that's
one.
Yeah.
I mean, those I'd take the time to see, but these ones in the afternoon, I mean, really, even as you're walking by them, many of them seem to be just an afterthought in design and stuff, so they don't do much for me. So I, you know, if they make a new one, maybe it'll be something I'll like, but I'm not holding my breath.
I will say the artwork for that I've seen, the concept art for the Festival of Fantasy or whatever the new parade is, seems interesting. I mean, I probably, when it starts, I'll probably at least try to make a point of getting a glimpse of it at some point just to see what it looks like. But, you know, whatever. I'm not a big parade guy, to be honest.
Right. Okay.
All right. Two more stories, and they're kind of semi-related. The much-dreaded rapid fill system is now in service at all the resorts. They have the rapid fill. It's not in every place that it's going to be, but each resort has it now. And the pricing, I think we've gone over the pricing here.
Yes.
It's outrageous.
I mean, absolutely.
I mean, unbelievable. $8.90. Who would spend $8.99 for a refillable mug for a day?
I can't.
Craziness.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
And what to make it worse is that the design, the one positive would be a cool new design for your rapid fill. No, it's the same Mickey Mouse floating around in the pool, and Minnie Mouse and Daisy, and all. It's the same thing that you had before. A couple of different colors, but otherwise it's the same thing.
When it comes to Disney and the pricing, so we don't get too far away from that part of it, but when it comes to the pricing of things, one of the things that always listen, I'm an annual pass holder. I have been for the last few years. I never go for a couple of days at a time. I'm just not somebody who does that. I understand what they're doing in their pricing structure for everything, where they're trying to encourage people to stay longer. I don't mind that. What I mind is the unbelievable nickel and diming of people who really can only go for a couple of days. And they've been doing that with park tickets, and now they're just doing this with the soda, for God's sake. I mean, it's just, to me, it's... I can't get past the pricing on it. I really can't.
It's ridiculous. I mean, encouraging people to stay longer, I mean, really, they think the price of soda... I mean, are people... Exactly. People who were going to stay 3 days, and see that the price for a the refillable mug was $14.99, but they said that, you know, if we stay a week, it's only $3 more. Let's stay a week instead.
Right.
I mean, that's just not, that's just ludicrous to even think about that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just nickel and diming. It's absolute nonsense. One of the problems, and I know we talked about it before, was the you can't refill it too quickly. I think it's a 20-minute break, or, you know, so you fill it once, you can't do it again for another 20 minutes. That's to prevent people from obviously from refilling it, taking it to the table, dumping it in some other glass, coming back 5 seconds later and refilling it again. But apparently, that for now is only with regards to the soda. The coffee and tea machines have not been switched over.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, so when you get that scalding hot cup of coffee, you can down that in seconds flat if you want.
Excellent.
And refill it as quickly as you want.
Excellent.
In a related story, talking about how cheap it is to go to Disney World, soft drinks, which cost Disney probably in the neighborhood of 3 cents for every large soda that you buy. Well, they jacked up the price. It's now it went from $2.99 for a large soda to $3.19. So a nice 20-cent jump. And coffee went up 10 cents as well. And coffee probably cost them even less than the soda. And that's now for a cup of coffee, that cheap Nescafe, it hasn't switched all over to Joffrey's yet, is $2.29. I mean, it's outrageous.
I'll tell you what they've done with the pricing structure as far as I go, especially now that this rapid fill pricing structure has changed. I've been a DVC member for, you know, going on 10 years soon. And this is what happens now. I go to the store on my way there and I pack my room full of bottled water, soda, and I'm going to start making my own coffee there too, because I'm just not going to work this kind of change over for inferior product. It's just your value is just not there. I'm not spending $3.20 for a fountain soda. It's just not.
I think about that.
There's nobody who thinks that's a good deal. I mean, it's just, you know, there's nobody who thinks that. So, or who thinks that's nobody would look at that and say, yeah, that's money well spent. I mean, I'd have to be desperate. And sometimes you are, so you do it. But I certainly make it so that I have been doing my best to make it so that I can't do that anymore. I don't, you know, move that kind of money to them anymore. It's just ridiculous.
And a lot of the other beverages have gone up as well. Like orange juice went up in like 10, 20 cents. I forget what it was. I don't have it in front of me. The only thing that didn't is Dasani water is still the same price, $2.50.
Yeah, $2.50 for a 12-ounce bottle or 16-ounce bottle of water, whatever it is.
I think it's 12. I think it's the smaller one.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, in relation to everything else, that's probably the best deal that they have.
Yeah, yeah.
Liquids.
That's true.
It probably costs, they probably make less money on the bottles of water that they sell, but still, it's outrageous.
Is that it for the news?
That is it for the news.
All right, on that depressing note, we'll take another short break and be back with our hidden gems of Disney's Animal Kingdom. Coming back in just a second. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jumbo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to JomboEveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back, folks, to Radio Harambe, the unofficial Disney's Animal Kingdom podcast. I am Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe studios. Joining us from Mongolia, it's morning here, so he's unable to search for his snow leopards, is Safari Mike.
Dumbo.
And Mike, couple of episodes ago, we did a listener questions kind of episode where we took a bunch of questions from all of our readers and listeners. And we had a couple in particular that were such broad questions and that we really liked that we wanted to dedicate an entire feature just to the answer, just to answer those questions. And one of them came from our friend Chef Keith, who is found on Twitter at DarthChef79. He has a blog. Something, the Dole Whip Dailies or something, right?
DoleWhipDaily.webs.com, I believe.
So check that out. He's great for one thing. He's a great supporter of the show and a fan of the show. He asked us to name our five hidden gems Disney's Animal Kingdom. And how I interpreted that was the five things that the average guest who comes in commando style, runs in, does his touring plan and then jumps out is going to miss, right? The half-day parkers miss these things. Let's put it that way. The folks who think that Animal Kingdom's a half-day park, they think it because they don't do these things that we're going to name. And these are just the top five. There are more. I know you had, like, you said you had like a dozen, right?
I kept saying, oh, this is a good one too. And it makes cuts and, you know, the whole thing.
And we wanted to do, you know, give you a sort of a good variety of things, including, attraction based stuff and details and even food and that kind of thing. So we wanted to put a lot of stuff in there. So here is our 10. I will begin with the one I like to do the best first, because I am a diehard fan of the Buridika Band, who is a band that plays in the middle of Harambe on a stage. Now, there's two bands that play on the stage. Tom Tam drummers are there as well. They are also terrific. But if you only have time, because you need to get to your reservation somewhere else at 3 o'clock and you want to make it a half-day park, if you only have time to stop and breathe for 2 seconds, make those 2 seconds to see the Buridika Band. They also go under the name Wasalu, which is W-A-S-S-A-L-O-U. You can find them on Reverb Nation. You can find them on, they've got some great music clips on Reverb Nation. And you can find them on Facebook that way as well. But in the band, in the park, I mean, they call themselves the Buridika Band. They are like an Afro-pop kind of jazz fusion sort of thing. Think Hugh Masekela, think Graceland from Paul Simon, you know, think those kind of grooves all sort of thrown into one. Great vocals. Sometimes there's a girl that sings with them. Sometimes it's a guy who's a lead singer. They have a sax player who is off the hook. They do a lot of songs you might not know, and then they do some that you will know as well. They've done, if you go by, you'll hear them do stuff from The Lion King. I've heard them do He Lives in You, which I believe is from the play. They apparently, according to the folks I've talked to, they are close to releasing a CD. And if you go to their page on Reverb Nation, you'll hear some clips from them. And I can't wait for this to come out. I adore this band. I think they're fantastic. And I've said on this show many times, people think that the place to go for great live entertainment is Epcot. I think Epcot is the second best place to go. I think this is the best place, and mostly because of the quality of this act. They are terrific. So stop and see the Buridika Band.
I agree with you. I agree with you about the entertainment at Animal Kingdom. It is top notch, and I think it's, I agree with you that it's better than Epcot. It's probably less options than Epcot, but overall the bands themselves. I love Viva Gaia, which is over by the Flame Tree Barbecue, although they don't play all that often. DJ Anon is fine, and he's over in Singapore. The Tam Tam drummers,
they're great,
that play at Harambe. But out of all of them, this one is the best. This one, you could sit there and just with a smile on your face listen to for a half hour of them playing. I recommend doing it at the Dawa Bar. Maybe we'll get to that later. But yeah, they're terrific. There's just no other way to put it.
So stop and see the Buridika Band. Check your schedule when you come in for when they play. They play multiple times a day, just like the bands over in Epcot, if you're more familiar with them. They play multiple times a day. And what is your leadoff hitter here?
I'm going to start over in Dino Land.
How did I know that?
Where my favorite store of all time is. And, you know, it's not so much hidden because it's really right there out in the middle. And people, a lot of people walk through it when they leave Dinosaur on the way into the rest of Dinoland. It's Chester and Hester Storm. And if you've read the blog, you know, I did a whole piece about the history of Chester and Hester.
Right.
It's just such a great store. There's just so much. And I'm not even talking about, like, shopping. I'm talking about just looking around at the decorations and the story that's being told here. Just look up to all the different things that are up in the ceiling. Everything from the sign over the door exiting that says, wipe your paws, to the picture of this old couple that is actually Chester and Hester. They have a framed dollar bill that's supposed to be the first dollar that Chester and Hester ever made at the store. I mean, all this kind of stuff. They sell eclectic things. Now, that used to be better than it is now. Now they have kind of gone more, at least half the store now is, you know, Toy Story toys, Star Wars. You know, when we were there in August, they had put out the Halloween stuff and there was like a big display of Halloween toys. But there's still a lot of dinosaur stuff. They sell, for example, you can buy comic books there, but the only comic books they sell are ones that have a dinosaur on the cover. There's like someone with Batman fighting a dinosaur or whatnot. I mean, that kind of stuff is just so much fun to hang out in that store. So I just love, and I think most people just sort of blow through the store, maybe take a look at some t-shirts and move on. But it's a great store just to meet, walk around in and look at the different decorations and things like that.
You know, and to its, in its defense, it's one, every single store in all of Walt Disney World has been invaded by the world of plush over the years. And a few at Animal Kingdom have managed to sort of stem the tide just a bit.
Right.
You know, and Chester and Hester's is one of them. I often think of the Mombasa and the Ziwani Traders, which are essentially the same, mm-hmm. over in Africa. That's one of my absolute favorite places. Didn't make my hidden gems list. I'll say it was on the list and the running didn't make it.
No, but talk about it here because that's, I mean, I think.
But it's for the same reasons. Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful themed place and it's got some great eclectic stuff that you don't find every other way, you know, in all the other stores everywhere in Disney World. And it's cool. It's beautifully themed. You know, it has artifacts, cultural artifacts, artwork. You know, it has its fair share of Mickey Mouse toys and stuff, but it has these other things that Chester and Hester's does. I don't think it has quite the attention to detail that Chester and Hester's does.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yes.
But it's cool.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stores. I think maybe shopping as a whole is sort of a hidden gem of Disney's Animal Kingdom.
That sounds like a show topic.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about that at some point. You're right. Maybe we should talk about the stores one day. But there's a lot of different stores like that that sell unique items that you will not find in any other place in Disney World. Whether that's the store at the at the end of the Expedition Everest, Mombasa. There's quite a few that are like that. This just happens to be my particular favorite one. And I think this is, as you said, probably the most attention to detail. The one that, while the others have like themes, and this one actually tells a story or was built to tell the story of Chester and Hester, and it does it in the store itself.
Very cool. My second one is an animal exhibit. And it's one that I think certainly defines the term hidden, because it's probably one of the most hidden things in all of Disney's Animal Kingdom, and that is the Galapagos tortoise exhibit, which you would say is, it's on one of the Tree of Life trails, but it's one that's particularly difficult to find, or at least if you'd walk right past it if you didn't know where to go and look at your map that closely. I always say it's before you get to the King Kong doors, the doors that look like they're from the film King Kong, that lead to the just in front of the bridge to Africa. You go through that trail, head towards the Tree of Life, pass a couple of different animals, it's a beautiful little space, and you get to the Galapagos tortoise. Now, the exhibit itself isn't anything particularly stunning. There are other hidden exhibits like the small clawed Asian otters exhibit. That's really kind of neat. This one doesn't have anything specific or special about the exhibit except for the tortoise. In case you didn't know, the Galapagos tortoise is, as far as I know, the largest living species of tortoise. Mm-hmm. These things in captivity live to, I believe, upwards of 170 years. They're obviously from the Galapagos Islands, from their name. Their shell is a real, like, kind of dull brown color. So take a second and look, because if you don't see it right away, he might be kind of slowly moving around somewhere else. These guys can be, I think, somewhere in the largest ones, of a range of 800 pounds and sometimes 6 feet long. This is a big turtle.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you're walking down this trail, you don't even know where the trail's leading, and if you catch him moving around, he'll take you back. You know, he'll stun you for a second, because over in this little mud area is this gigantic tortoise. And I just love him. I always make a point of going over this to see the Galapagos tortoise.
Well, yeah, this trail is probably maybe the most hidden. I mean, it's right before you get to, as you said, the King Kong doors, the trail itself almost looks like a cast member path. There's no, like,
yes,
real sign.
Yes.
You really don't know that you're supposed to walk down there. But one rule that you should always have in the Animal Kingdom, as well as other places like Epcot, unless it's roped off, walk it. You know, go.
Right.
And so when you walk back there, it's not just the tortoise, which, you know, is your favorite, but there's porcupines back there, saddle-billed storks are back there, and you actually get really up close to the Tree of Life itself.
Sure.
Some really good shots of different animals that you don't see from the front where most people look at it.
And that leads you into one of yours, right?
Yeah. See, I you know, this is me cheating. at first I was thinking, you know, this path that you were just talking about and a couple of others. And I said, to heck with it. I'll just put them all in what I would call hidden trails. And there's a lot of these at Disney's Animal Kingdom. I could think of three other ones that come to mind right away. First, we'll go back to Dinoland briefly. So right outside of the dinosaur ride, Countdown to Extinction, if you're walking out of it and you make a quick right as you're heading towards Primeval World in that area, there's actually a trail that's called the Cretaceous Trail, and it's filled with plant life that dates back from the time of the dinosaurs, ancient things like chickens and things like that, ferns, and it's very primeval looking in the path itself, and it is so quiet back there. There's actually a large statue of a dinosaur that, you know, kids and stuff can climb over, and I have pictures of my kids climbing all over this dinosaur. And it's just such a quiet, hidden path. It's a great place to just sit down and relax for 15 minutes or so if you're you know, stressed out from a crowded, because even during the busiest times of the year, it's dead back there.
Right.
Nobody knows it exists. Number two is actually...
I believe, before you go on, I believe... aren't there a couple of benches?
Yeah, oh, yes, there are benches.
Because something tells me that in... that I have had a tendency to go to one of my hidden gems coming up, purchase a particular snack item, and walk my way to one of those benches for just that reason, because you kind of get out of the... I haven't done it in a little while, but I remember sitting back there.
Yeah, I like to make a point of going back there to let the kids play on the dinosaur and just...
Yeah.
And just relax for a little bit. It's so quiet, so peaceful, so... And it's very, really actually quite pretty with the plant life, an unusual kind of plant life. Another one is sort of around the Tree of Life itself. It's actually right across from the Pizza Fari. And if you take this path, you actually get real close to the Tree of Life. But you actually go underneath the netting that you now see. And you actually get very close to the kangaroos that are back there. That, you know, some people don't even know they're there. You walk all the way back, you pass this giant, the pool where the giant catfish are, and you walk down, there's a couple of different, like, little caves where you could sit under and stuff like that, and you get real close to the tree. Closer than, I think, just about anywhere, except maybe the trail that you mentioned before.
Right.
And you can, you know, watch the kangaroos that, again, you're almost by yourself. Very rarely people even bother going back there. It's off the beaten path. And people don't even really know about it.
And kangaroos are really cool. And you could also see, I mean, you can essentially see that exhibit from the front,
yes,
in front of the tree or from in front of these trails. But the kangaroos are often not there. They're often on the other side along this trail that Mike's talking about.
Yeah, there's shade back there. They're often sitting right by where you can see them up close to the tree, but not where you can see them up front. There's also some vultures back there that that are part of that exhibit as well. Get a good look at.
Yeah.
Finally, the last of the three, that these hidden trails, and this one is in the oasis. And I don't think a lot of people when they go through the oasis, they just sort of blow past the oasis, hiking up to, you know, the Tree of Life and doing what they have to do, or getting out of Dodge and the park itself. And there's actually a path that, you know, there's to the right and to the left, you know, as you're looking at the park, to the right there's the Babirusa, to the left is the Anteater path. But there's actually a path that crosses between the two of them. And back there, there's a waterfall. That's where the wallabies are. And there's a little rope bridge that leads into the cave system that actually walks you to the Tree of Life. A lot of people skip that little path entirely. They just, you know, head right or left. They don't take the time to cut across the middle. Enjoy the rope bridge. It's just a pretty little place with the waterfall, waterfowl. There's some turtles, and there's the wallaby too.
Yeah, it's beautiful there. It's beautiful there. Now I understand people coming in a rope drop want to go past it, but because you want to get to your to your e-tickets early. But the whole reason why you get to your e-tickets early is so that you have time later on the way out to go through these things. And that's a great example of something that's often missed. That whole area is beautiful, and there's some beautiful macaws in there usually and things like that. So it's gorgeous. Absolutely.
Right.
Okay, so my third. Are we ready for my third?
Sure, go ahead.
Since you just piled three into one.
I got another one that's two into one, but go ahead.
Okay, well, that's all right. This is more than just two or three. Because this is a hidden gem kind of based on details. And one of the things that we always talk about is how the Animal Kingdom is the most detailed and most themed theme park probably anywhere. And it is – there are along the walking trail, we'll go specifically to Maharaja and Pangani, the two big walking trail, the two large walking trail, zoological trails. They are dotted with information that is not just aesthetic, but also kind of storytelling. And you could spend a lot of time reading these things. My favorite example is when you go into the Pangani Forest and you see the Okapi exhibit, there is a, I don't know how you explain it, but sort of a display case that looks almost like a place where people put up clippings, you know, like a notification type of thing. And it's obviously meant for those who work at the Pangani Forest and to, you know, to show to guests and stuff. And in there is a clipping that explains how they actually went to the trouble of doing this. Because, now Mike, help me in this. The Okapi would not be in that area of Africa what the rest of Pangani is supposed to be part of. They would be in a different area of Africa. So I believe that is the case. So,
no, really?
So they had to explain how they got to Pangani. And they do it by writing this whole thing that says, "Today was a very triumphant day in Harambe Wildlife Reserve as Reserve Director Dr. K. Kolunda pleasurably accepted three rare okapis as a permanent addition to the reserve. The three okapis, two females and a young male, were transplanted to Harambe by way of aircraft from their former home in the Ituri rainforest in Zaire in Central Africa. Very shy and highly solitary, the okapi was unknown to the world outside the Ituri forest until 1901. Local people showed a skin to British explorer Sir Harry Johnston." So these little things, in the context of a story, rather than in the context of, you know, textbook style things, gives you these little bits, right? They give you these little bits of information. They're all over the place, especially in Pangani.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Maharaja has them too, not quite as wordy, I would say, as they are in Pangani. Certainly by the, there's not as many spots for this kind of thing in Maharaja where they have these big posters and stuff. You see them more in Pangani, but Maharaja has them. The one that always comes to my mind is the ones in the bat exhibit, where they have posters that explain, like, how the local inhabitants rely on bats for their crops and to make a sustainable resource, you know, for the farmers and that kind of thing. So I think, again, it's a detail. It's not something specifically to do, but it will absolutely enhance your experience in these zoological trails. And they're some of them are really cool.
Yeah, I mean,
I love them.
Yeah, both of these trails are sort of telling a different story. We, on episode, what was it, 3, went through the Maharaja Jungle Trek in great detail and what right. that story was. Pangani, which I'm sure we'll probably do at some point in the future, tells a very different story. It's the story of they're building a new reserve, and they're populating, and they're bringing it. The example you brought is okapi, which are found in other rainforests in Africa, but not in the mythical Harambe one.
Right.
That they're bringing here to expand their territory. It's sort of telling the story of trying to reintroduce animals into nature reserves and stuff like that, which is what they're actually trying to do in the wild and other places.
Right.
They're in a mythical sense, and they actually tell you the background of, like, one of the most famous things about an okapi. And, you know, when I worked at the Bronx Zoo, we have okapi, and, you know, I always gave a tour of okapis and talked about them. And one of the things we always mentioned was, you know, they weren't really, quote-unquote, discovered by Western science until, you know, 1901, very recently. And mountain gorillas are sort of dissimilar in that regard. So they tell that to people through the way that you described it, through this sort of little funny little detail.
Yeah, and if you go in there with kids, read them some of these. Just pass along this information. Cool thing for the kids to learn. What is your third?
My third is kind of similar to yours, but it's poster art. And not to go back to the blog again, but I did a piece about the poster art of Harambe, showing pictures of all the different posters that they've put up in various places throughout Harambe. But that's not the only place. I was actually going to say the posters of Harambe is one of mine. And then, we were talking about the Disney hipsters before. They put up a post today about all the different cool themed posters at the Yak and Yeti.
Yeah.
And there are a bunch of these around, particularly that section of Anandapur and Harambe itself, and also at Sherkazang, where Expedition Everest is. Take a few minutes, read these posters. They tell fascinating things, whether it's Captain Bob's Safari in Harambe, or... it's the poster telling you to, go to Atavika Station Number 12 Thursday night to hear how we can stop the T-Tech Logging Company, which, for those who don't know, is the people logging the Kali River Rapids.
Right.
All that kind of stuff. You walk around and check out those posters and that kind of stuff, particularly in those two spots, around Yak and Yeti and at Harambe. They're a lot of fun to look at. In fact, some of them they even put on T-shirts now.
Right.
I know the hipsters put up one about the Himalayan escapes, tours, and expeditions with the famous saying, "There and back with the flying yak," and it's a picture of a yak with wings. I have that on a T-shirt. It's one of my favorite T-shirts. It's a great T-shirt. It's a great poster. Check out that kind of stuff. Take the time.
Where'd you get the shirt from?
The Sherkazang Bazaar, which is at the end of the Expedition Everest ride.
Cool.
So that's my number 3.
Because the Yak and Yeti store has some neat stuff too. The one around the corner.
Yes, it does actually. You're right. It has a lot of fun little. I know Mickey. That's where I think they sell like the samurai and the dragon, little action figure guys. And they have some cool T-shirts and that kind of stuff. It's a lot of fun. I agree.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do shopping as a topic.
That's a good idea.
Okay, my fourth one. And it's hard to pick which one of these is my favorites. But I'll say this. This is one of those things that, along with the Buridika ban, I can't really go very long without this. And this is a stop at the Dino Bites Snacks. It is a snack cart, and it's made out of that classic shiny Bakelite that they used to make, for those of us in the East Coast know this, used to make old diners out of.
Right.
It's located right next to the Restaurantosaurus. It's small. It's not the size of a diner. It's kind of like a size of like a small trailer, really. and it has mostly desserts, but what it particularly has is fresh baked cookie ice cream sandwiches. where they take vanilla ice cream and put it in with two often warm, freshly baked chocolate chip cookies. If it's warm and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you've already had yourselves a couple of drinks, which I'll get to later, and you need something in your stomach, I really can't recommend anything better than this. I really can't. It's one of my favorite things, and people will walk right past it and not even notice it's there. It is one of those things where, you know what people do, right? They go looking for a Mickey bar, or they go looking for the pre-packaged ice creams and stuff. Forget those. You can get those at the places that don't have good food, like the Hollywood Studios and Magic Kingdom. Animal Kingdom has good food options, and this is one of my favorite decadent pleasures.
Yeah, this is a good one. Two tips on it for people who are interested in it. Number one is that they are huge.
Oh, yeah. They're a meal.
Yeah, you could, feel free to have it all by yourself. But, I mean, if you're, not all that hungry but could use a little bit, split it. You can easily split it with somebody.
Don't be crazy.
And still be full. Yes, you can.
Come on. You can't. Get two of them.
Come on. Anyway. And
you're in Disney World. You're going to walk it off in the next 2 hours.
Secondly, there's actually two spots where you can actually get it. The one you mentioned, I think, is probably less crowded.
Yeah, but that's also why I like it.
Yeah, there's also one right before you hit Africa, not far from the trail that we were talking about before, the one with the Galapagos tortoise.
Yeah.
It's a little cart on Discovery Island right before Africa that sells them as well.
Yeah, but that I picked Dino Bites because that cart, it's the same exact stuff, but that's a very busy thoroughfare.
Yes.
And when you want to get in to something like this that can be a little messy and sloppy, you need some alone time. You need some space. So I'd go to Dinoland.
Okay.
And your fourth.
This was a I wanted to go something food oriented and I thought about going Tamu Tamu, but that's not really hidden. It's just, not appreciated as much as some other places, I don't think. But anyway.
I would agree.
I decided that at the Dawa Bar, one of my favorite things in the whole wide world is the sugarcane mojito that they have there. It is killer. What I love to do is go to the Tamu Tamu, grab whatever I want to eat for lunch there, whether it be the pulled beef or the whatever, take it over to the Dawa Bar, and get myself a sugarcane mojito, sit there, and enjoy life for a half hour. A lot of, the Dawa Bar is not generally crowded. People usually don't sit there and drink.
No.
If you time it right, you can sit there and watch your Barutica band, too. It's great. It's a great spot. It is an absolutely great spot, and don't pass it up.
The Dawa Bar, I considered that, but I don't think that's very hidden. I think most everybody knows it's there. It's very visible, and it's got to, you can't miss the fact that there's alcohol on the wall and that kind of stuff. But I think it's right on that border. I think it could be that. The Dawa Bar, again, is a better version of an Epcot Pavilion drinking spot. It has, other than maybe like, the Rose and Crown and the what's the one in Italy? It just went out of my head.
Tutto Gusto
or La Cava de Tequila. I mean, those are kind of indoor themed bars. This is up to that level, just maybe not as expansive. There certainly isn't as much space in the bar. But they sell, African beer, different types of themed. I think they sell South African wines. They sell different types of themed drinks, so they really do that sort of Epcot feel with the, representing
the Harambe.
By representing Harambe in the drinks. So that's a good one. But my final one is my adult beverage. It's funny that we both picked adult beverages. And mine is one that I really only recently discovered, and that is the magic of the Yak Attack. Don't recommend this for anybody who's diabetic or is susceptible to those type of sugar highs or anything to that effect as well. It is a mango daiquiri. Has a little wild berry flavor in it. It just tastes like a mango daiquiri to me. But it is delicious. It's frozen. It looks gorgeous. If you see the thing, it's very well presented. It goes down very easy. And there's nothing like a frozen drink for a warm day walking around the park. So if you can't sit at the Dawa Bar, and I do then tend to do that a bit, and you want to walk around and have something, this is one of the things I grab. I've actually a couple of times gone into the bar at Yak and Yeti, because I'm a bar fly, if you haven't figured that out. And they have a beautiful bar, a small one, but a beautiful bar. And you just sit there and have a couple of these. The world is good, especially if you're taking Disney transportation on the way home.
You know, the Yak and Yeti is an underappreciated bar itself.
Yes.
It is a beautiful bar. Small, relatively small, but it is such a nice place to have a drink. Having said that, you can get the Yak and Yeti outside. I mean,
the Yak Attack, yeah.
Outside as well, so you don't actually have to go in.
Right.
Which is a bonus.
Right. You don't get the presentation of the nice glass.
That's true. I'm not really a frozen drink kind of guy. You know, if I'm going margarita, I'm going it on the rocks. I generally don't get the frozen one.
Right.
Big daiquiri fan. But I do love the Yak Attack. It's a very good drink. I've been to the Yak and Yeti for lunch a couple of times, and I always get it.
I'm the same as you. I'm a beer drinker. I don't tend to drink these kind of drinks. You know, maybe when I'm in the Caribbean, I do a bit, but I tend not to. But this one is a vice. I dream about this one on the bus ride back to the lodge. And your final one.
The final one. And this is probably this would probably get my vote for number one, maybe with the Hidden Trails, and that is the cast members. And not just all the cast members are obviously great and whatever, but at the Animal Kingdom, and I think I've said this maybe on our blog, as maybe not on the show itself, but yeah. I just feel the cast members at the Animal Kingdom are better than all the other parks. And here's why. Because at the Animal Kingdom, they interact more with the guest than they do at pretty much any other park. At the other parks, it's really, you know, please move to the center of the aisle, or, you know, all the way down to the left, filling in all available space, you know, blah, 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 blah. Here at the Animal Kingdom, they engage in discussions with the guest. It's the cast members who mount or along the trails and talk to you about the specific animals. We talked about this at Maharaja, where, you know, each exhibit usually has a cast member there to discuss the tigers or the brow antlered deer or what have you. But also throughout the Africa section and other parts of Asia, they have cast members from those particular spots that can talk to you about the different things from their homeland. I remember one time where it was our last day. We spent it at the Animal Kingdom, and my kids played a game called Mancala, which is basically these gems, and you move them in a certain order, and you try to get, you know, more gems than the other person. And these two cast members who were from Africa were showing my children how to play this game, and the kids had a blast. And the gentleman whose name escapes me was from Botswana. I had a conversation with him about the Okavango Delta and how close he was. But it's not just there. In Asia, we went to, in the Maharaja, we had, there was one cast member who was actually from Indonesia who was at the Bat House. And we were talking to him about the giant centipedes that they have an exhibit of, these disgusting looking things. And he was from Jakarta, and he says, oh, you know, you get them in your basement all the time in Jakarta. And he was telling us a story about the, and, you know, just freaked me out. But it was just fascinating to sit there and talk to the cast members about, you know, about what life is like in Indonesia or Botswana. You don't get that, you know, at the Magic Kingdom. Not that the cast members at the Magic Kingdom are terrible by any means. They're all fantastic. But you get more interaction, I think, with the cast members at Animal Kingdom, whether it's at the animal trails or at these things. I know they man booths where you can get like a color to color in the flags of different African nations. And I think with the Wilderness Explorers badges, that's just amplified even more now.
Yeah. You know, I have a friend of mine who is a cast member at the Animal Kingdom, and he's been in the company for a while, and he's one of these guys who has been, you know, they move him around quite a bit. And he said to me, you know, not too long ago when he started working at the Animal Kingdom, he said to me something to the effect of, you know, it's a there's a brotherhood, a camaraderie within the cast members everywhere he goes, but nothing anywhere else on property compares to the Animal Kingdom. He says there's just a vibe, a camaraderie, an enthusiasm towards what they're doing at the Animal Kingdom that he's never experienced at any of the other parks or any of his other time at Walt Disney World. And he said that he hopes that comes across to the guests that come there, and I can assure him it does.
Yeah. So, I mean, for my favorite, my best hidden gem is to make sure that, you know, don't walk past the cast members who are there in front of the tigers or who are there walking around Harambe, with games and things like that. Engage and learn something about Botswana or Jakarta or tigers or gibbons or American crocodiles. You know, it's they do this in Dinoland too, where they have people with stations talking about different fossils and things like that. It's really fascinating.
Very cool. Well, there you go. You got your 5. That's 10. Mike, Ed probably did about that. We went up to about 16 or 17. If you cast all the cast members, we're probably talking more along the 2100.
Three different kinds of cast members.
So there's your hidden gems. Something to lengthen your stay at the Animal Kingdom. Before we go, I just want to thank you once again for listening to Radio Harambe. Certainly for more information on the Animal Kingdom, invite you to visit us at johnboreveryone.com. Like I said at the top of the show, you'll find everything you need to know there about the Animal Kingdom. Mike talked a lot about some of the things you'll find on our blog. We also have attraction and dining reviews, stuff about the shopping we did mention. All of that information is on there. We have lots of photos from around the park, which I'm hoping to update. I know a lot of people look at those photos, and some of them are a little old. Both Mike and I have separate trips planned in the next few weeks, so we'll have even more photographs to start putting up. You can find us on Twitter. Mike, you are at JomboEveryone, correct?
Correct.
And you can find me now at Radio Harambe. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/JomboEveryone. And we also have a YouTube channel, which we're kind of growing as the days go by. I'd also like you to check out our store. And we have some exclusive great T-shirts that say right on there, not a half-day park. They're now available. What was that?
Mine's en route.
Excellent. And besides you, I would also like to thank the other people who have purchased them. You can find them at Zazzle.com/JomboEveryone. 50% of the profits that we make off this, we are going to donate to our conservation partners. You can find out more about the conservation partners by going to our conservation page, which you'll see right at JomboEveryone.com. So that's really the point of making these shirts. We're doing it just so we can sort of raise funds and be able to donate on behalf of Animal Kingdom fans to these conservation groups that are on the ground, sort of on the front lines of these fights to save these species from extinction. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes. We're also available on Stitcher and on Podbean, which is the home to it. And if you can rate us and review us on iTunes, that is a helpful thing to get the word out. Mm-hmm. So that's it, Mike.
We were new and noteworthy on iTunes.
I heard that.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. So thank you for everybody who has already rated us. We've gotten a lot of great feedback on iTunes already.
I always felt I was a bit noteworthy. So someday I might be.
All I know is I'm not new. I can tell you that.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Go back to your snow leopard hunts.
And thank Chef Keith for the great topic for tonight.
Thank you, Chef. And we'll have more of these coming. We have a couple other ones, at least from those listener questions that we're going to do in the future. But we hope you enjoyed the show. So for some more Safari, Mike, I am Dave McBride. Kwa Harini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Now